mesdames et messieurs. Venez voir l'attraction la plus formidable, la plus sensationnelle du siècle.
Radio CD, Radio CDC. Casa del Caracol. Radio Casa del Caracol. Hi, dear listener of Radio Caracol Channel, the radio that show off with incredible topics. And today we are going to talk about food and soul or psychology with Amanda from Petrolia in California. Thanks, Amanda, for sharing your knowledge with us. How are you doing today?
Thanks, I'm good. I just returned home from a weekend away.
Cool, I'm glad to hear that. So Amanda, you want to share with us your experience in investigating the connection between what you are eating and what you are feeling. Can you tell us why did you start to explore this topic, the connection, the relation between food and mind?
So many years ago, when I was a lot younger, I remember what happened, actually. I read this book. It was called something like Poisoning Our Children, Living in a Toxic World. And it was a book that was written by a woman who was suffering from environmental illness. And she was super sick, and she had been to lots of doctors, and nobody could tell her what was wrong with her. And everybody thought she was just crazy, and she was making it up. But she finally figured out, she found a doctor who helped her figure out that she was sick with toxins from their home and her environment. And so the book talked about the food supply in America and how it's just really toxic, like the factory farms, the animals that are raised there are full of antibiotics and pesticides, and and they're not in a healthy environment, and they don't really properly filter out the sick and dead and dying animals, and just, you know, the sort of standard mass-produced food supply is really dirty and yucky. And then she went on to talk about dairying and what's happening with dairy animals and poultry and, you know, chickens and turkeys, and then how all that food is then processed and not very clean that way either. And so as a result of this book, when I think I was 19 or 20 when I read this book, I decided I was going to eat all organic, and I decided to become a vegetarian for the purpose of, just eating clean, like trying to avoid toxins, not necessarily because I felt like I shouldn't eat animals. And, around that same time, I was starting to have some trouble with anxiety. I was having anxiety attacks. Like, I'd wake up in the middle of the night or when I was trying to fall asleep, I'd suddenly get kind of panicked I think, maybe even at that time, I noticed a few particular things that really aggravated things for myself, like coffee. I figured out, like, I was a very dedicated coffee drinker, and I figured out that I couldn't drink coffee because it just, my body seemed to not do well with it, and it made those symptoms worse. So, it's just sort of like, I'm not sure how I figured that out, honestly, but... So I made that connection just for myself, but
maybe it was just a feeling, and you just wanted to stop something that is not helping you to sleep.
Right. Yeah, I suppose that's true. Yeah, and it was a clear reaction, and kind of in the short term. And I had a similar experience with marijuana. I used to smoke a lot of marijuana, but I had to stop because I would get anxious and kind of upset and just wouldn't feel right in my body when I'd use it. So, which was kind of hard socially, because my whole community of people, it was like one of the things that we would do together, just to share time and be together and enjoy things. So it was kind of, it became this, everybody would always offer me, and I'd always have to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that anymore. But that's kind of as far as all that went. And at that point, so it wasn't till many years later that I started studying this. And again, it was motivated by my own issues, and you know, my anxiety got really severe. But I still didn't quite make the connection then. It was maybe like a year or two later. I started playing around with diet and really like considering this question of, you know, how is what I'm eating contributing to all of my symptoms? And it wasn't just anxiety. There were physical symptoms as well that I was experiencing, like pain and, you know, aches and pains and different problems with PMS. And I had ovarian cysts. And so I found this online resource that was, you know, like a special diet that was supposed to help resolve ovarian cysts. And so, and it involved giving up gluten and dairy and sugar primarily. Those were sort of the main thing. And maybe red meat, which I think at the time I didn't really eat a lot of anyway. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try this diet and see if it helps. And I tried it and actually felt a lot better. You know, like my moods were more stable. I had more energy. I just felt calmer. So I did it for like a month, and then my thinking was that, oh, I just do this for a short period of time and then I could go back to eating the way that I normally ate. And so that's what I did. And, you know, I was better off in the short term, but, you know, eventually other things happened and I went just right back to eating all of those foods again. And so I sort of had like several iterations of that, but then things got really severe. Like, you know, there's like all these things and I could go on and on about, you know, but essentially then I really started studying, you know, some of these other, these sort of fancy diets like the paleo diet. And I started studying, you know, what, like, why do these diets work? Why do they help people? And just understanding some of the mechanisms of why a food like gluten can be so, why it matters so much for a lot of people to remove it, and how it can have this really profound effect on not only physical symptoms and inflammation in the body, but that it can drastically affect moods, especially if someone has particular genetics or, you know, has other preconditions going on in their body. So, and at this point, I've just studied that extensively, and it really is, you know, something like anxiety can have so much to do with particular food sensitivities. On the one hand, it can also be related to blood sugar imbalances and just, you know, not managing that appropriately. It can have a lot to do with infections in the gut with viruses or bacteria or parasites or yeasts and fungus. It can have to do with nutrient deficiencies, some of which are common with, you know, vegetarianism. Nutrients like vitamin B12 and magnesium are cofactors for just countless important functions in the body. And if you're missing those nutrients, then, or maybe you're like a little deficient in them, but then you experience a really big stress, which increases the body's demands for those things. And then all of a sudden that uses up your stores and then you're deficient. Or you maybe have genetic predispositions that actually make your body less efficient at using those nutrients or acquiring them, or your body actually needs more than other people need to keep those functions going. So there's so many layers and ways that that can go wrong. But the research is pretty clear, you know, sort of the scientific literature, that depression and, you know, anxiety is kind of like a related condition, that really what depression is actually a symptom of certain conditions in the body rather than actually a diagnosis or a thing. Like, depression is actually, it's a symptom of inflammation in the brain and in the body. And it's not really treated that way. And this is kind of like a new idea, or like, you know, newly being promoted and studied. But it's really looking like that's really and truly what it is.
Interesting. And how do you prevent that?
The primary way that we influence that process for ourselves, like the single biggest contributor that we do day in and day out, is the food we eat. We can eat foods that are helping prevent and or reduce inflammation, or we can be eating foods that are fueling that fire and making it worse. So it's absolutely important, you know, what we put into our bodies, and then also how we take care of ourselves otherwise. How do we exercise? How do we, you know, do we get enough rest? And how, what are we doing to manage our stress? Like those things are just absolutely essential and key to manage mood. And I just over the weekend was listening to an interview with one of my heroes in this field of functional medicine as applied to mental health issues. And she wrote a book last year. Her name's Dr. Kelly Brogan. And she's trained as a psychiatrist. She's a board certified psychiatrist. And she started her career trained as a traditional psychiatrist, but her own personal health crisis shifted her conversation about it. And she started really diving into the literature to study, you know, what was the research really saying about these medications that she was prescribing to her patients. And what she learned was that there's basically zero evidence that the psychiatric medications like the SSRIs and the benzodiazepines and all these other medications, they don't do anything. In almost every case, they perform, you know, less well than the placebo.
Okay.
You know, and that in cases where it looks like that research is clear, that it does provide an improvement, that there was data that was thrown out or scrubbed from those studies, and that this theory of, you know, mental illness being a single cause disease, mm-hmm. being that, oh, it's like a serotonin problem, is actually completely debunked. She debunks it in this book. It's a fantastic book. It's called A Mind of Your Own, I believe is the title of the book. And so I was just listening to an interview with her on my travels while I was in the car, and just, I've heard her speak before and I've read her book, and I just really admire her and how, you know, she's just like, it's really criminal the way that we treat this, and that she has a practice. She's a practicing psychiatrist, but she has a zero zero drug practice. She doesn't prescribe drugs. And in fact, she helps her patients get off of drugs and helps them resolve their mental health issues with diet and lifestyle medicine and key nutrient supplementation. And the getting off the medication part is really challenging for people. These medications are so damaging to the body. And yeah, and she was talking about they're extremely addictive, actually. Yeah. She's describing how she has to sometimes, you know, she helps people taper. You have to taper people off of these medications because they're habit forming for the body. And that, you know, she sometimes has to reduce the dose by 1/100 of a gram at a time, like extremely small increments. And even that causes discomfort and difficult symptoms. And it can take them years to actually get all the way off of these medications. So,
have you tried this medication before trying to solve the issue in doing diets? Have you tried also to go to a psychiatric clinic and ask them for some help because you were having this anxiety and depression? Have you started first to go to the modern traditional medicine?
No, I haven't. I mean, I think it's taken me a long time to recognize that I actually, you know, have symptoms of anxiety and have symptoms of depression. Like it didn't really occur to me like that was really what was going on until kind of recently, until it, you know, a couple of years ago when it got really, really bad. But I have had moments like when it was really bad where I was like, maybe I need to take medication, but I generally have been just of the opinion that I didn't feel like they were helpful and the side effects are so bad that I just wasn't really willing to try that. And I, you know, I'm just that kind of person. I'm going to explore all the other options before I choose a drastic intervention like medication or surgery or, you know, like I want to try everything I can do. So I have never tried those medications.
Okay. And would you like to follow the path of this professional psychiatric that did this complete change in the way to practice psychology? Would you like to follow this path and help people with this issue? or do you feel that you could help people with that? It's really big, because sometimes it's also maybe not one reason why you're having this inflammation in your brain. Maybe you can have many other reasons, not just what you are putting in your body. So how can you follow this way as trying to do this job, knowing that you have maybe many different things that have an impact on this inflammation?
Yes, I absolutely want to follow in her path. I mean, I'm not a licensed medical professional, and I'm not trained in, you know, the sort of therapy aspect of, you know, psychotherapy or whatnot. And I certainly am not trained to help people taper off their medications. So, you know, I absolutely want to help people with these issues on the physiological level, and to the level that I'm able with the tools that I have available. And, you know, if somebody comes to me who is on medication, you know, and they want to get off of that medication, they're going to need to, you know, work with their doctor to do that process, that part of the process. But really, so much of it, of what's possible, is, you know, available to me. So yeah, diet is one piece.
And what are those tools you're talking about to figure out why the mood is so unbalanced sometimes, and also to make this connection with the diet someone is having?
It's sort of the way that I work is I really begin with that piece, and I start with removing the what I consider the top three inflammatory foods. And those are, in America, it might be a little different. In Europe, because the food supply is a little cleaner there and less contaminated, the laws are more strict about chemicals that can or can't be used. But in America, gluten and dairy and sugar are the top three foods that, you know, I just start with. And the purpose is that for most people, they're, especially if they're sick, those foods are often really causing problems, but it's hard to see because we eat them so frequently. And so, you know, we just take on like removing those for a period of time so we can just A, see if there's improvement, and then B, we can kind of see what else is going on besides that, because that can just like complicate the picture, right? And then, you know, with anxiety, especially, you know, there's some groups and types of foods that can be stimulating for the brain that can cause symptoms. So, you know, caffeine is the obvious one. Caffeine and chocolate. There's a group of foods called glutamates, which are excitatory for the brain. So MSG is an example of one of these foods that is really stimulating for the brain, and for certain people can cause a problem. So just sort of understanding the physiology of these groups of foods and sort of taking a look at what the person is actually eating. I do some food tracking with people to understand like what are they actually consuming? And we track that alongside with any and all symptoms that are happening. So we can try and start making these connections between, oh, well, every time you have that cup of coffee in the morning, your anxiety is really bad at 4 p.m. But if we remove that, what else is happening? And then similarly, sort of simultaneously, then we start looking at the blood sugar issue as well. And sometimes I'll have people track that with a little, you know, glucometer. It's, you buy a cheap one at the store and you can do this at home. And a lot of times anxiety symptoms are actually, you know, low blood sugar, like this feeling of low blood sugar. The body's kind of panicking, saying, I really need fuel, but it's panicking. Like, oh my God, where is the food going to come from? And high blood sugar can also cause, you know, uncomfortable sensations in the body. So just, and sort of helping people regulate that through the day can take people a really long way towards feeling better. And that blood sugar problem is can be like a domino that destabilizes hormones and all kinds of other things. And then the other huge tool that I have available to me is to experiment with amino acids, free-form amino acids, which the building blocks of our neurotransmitters, so the brain chemicals. And so, you know, you can use these as tools to just support the body because sometimes if somebody's been under stress for a long period of time, their body's kind of burned up and used up their neurotransmitters and some of the components that they use to make those up, and they can be just depleted with those things. So yeah, you can, you know, test them and see if they help or make a difference for that person. And if so, then, you know, you can help just support them with that in the sort of short to medium term while you get the digestive system sorted out. And then again, all this, you know, there's also investigation into other possible underlying factors. So, you know, I get the diet and the blood sugar. We work on getting that all together. We try and get the person exercising because that helps you feel good and calm the brain. And if they're really stressed out, we're going to work on developing some sort of mindfulness or meditation practice or something to just help bring that stress level down.
So it's a kind of combination of many different things. Do you also give like a psychological support? Like, in fact, all the steps you're talking about, it's like coaching someone. So in certain point, it's also giving him or her some support. So I do imagine it's also like a kind of mental things. Are you also curing? Can you cure the brain also on this side? Like talking about what happens in your life, things more personal.
So again, you know, I'm not a licensed practitioner in here in America, like to practice therapy, you know, you need to have a special license and it's, you know, several years of training and you have to be mentored for many years. But yeah, what I'm doing is coaching. And yeah, it does get personal and we do get into life details, but you know, it's really from the perspective of how can I encourage you to make good choices, or like, where can we just make some small changes in your life, or what, you know, and it's sort of a process of figuring out, well, what is that person capable of right now? What are they willing to do? If I'm encouraging them with my knowledge and experience and training about what I know makes a difference for these things. But just to give an example, you know, I had a client last year who was just really sort of my ideal, perfect client. You know, they really were struggling with anxiety, but they also, you know, they have a really stressful life. They have two children, young children, and the youngest one, who at the time I was working with her, was about 9 months old, and he was born with a developmental disability, and he's going to be disabled for his whole life. And, you know, it was a really, I mean, extremely stressful birth. And then he was born, and then they learned, that was the first time they learned that there was a problem. And he had to be flown to San Francisco on short notice and was separated from the mom. And, you know, and just, he has a cleft palate, and so he couldn't nurse. And so they were having to tube feed him. And I mean, it's just every piece of raising this baby was like double, you know, it's already hard enough to raise a baby, but it was doubly hard. And so, you know, this person has had anxiety most of her life, and then really wanted, you know, to just deal with that, and also wanted to lose some weight and, you know, just figure out how to deal with all of this. And, you know, this person didn't have money to deal with fancy testing or supplements even, you know. So we did, everything that we did was just with diet and lifestyle. It's just, you know, like, let's clean up your diet. Let's see if, can we get you sleeping a little bit more at night, even though you have a baby that needs to, you know, and you need to get up and feed and pump your breast milk all night long. And, you know, can we get you
at least a better sleep, a deeper sleep?
Yeah.
A real sleep.
Yeah. And a little bit of exercise, you know, and a little bit of stress, you know, breathing. When that feeling of anxiety starts creeping up on you, like, see if you can take a few deep breaths and really just check in to see, like, what is your body really telling you that it needs right now? I mean, it's just really simple and straightforward, you know. And she had some, like, there was some kind of negative self-talk, you know what I mean by this? Like, you know, negative thoughts in the head.
You don't think that many people are having this? I mean,
oh yeah,
my husband is such a cool person. He's super relaxed. And when I was sharing that it was happening to me, he said, to me also, but I just don't express it the same as you are, or it does not have the same impact. I'm not sensitive like you on that. So it happens to many, many persons.
Yeah. No, I think absolutely. I mean, I think we all have those negative inner thoughts, but this was like really derailing her day and, you know, and leading her to make bad choices, you know, like kind of to say, what's the use anyway? You know, I'm going to have a drink, you know, even though it's like 3 in the afternoon. And so, you know, I just, it's really different and customized for each person. And I really have to consider like, what's going to speak to this person and, you know, how am I going to really help them educate them and understand, you know, the purpose of why it's important to shift this, but also what can I do for them or help them do for themselves that's going to present, you know, a meaningful option. And so one of the things I did with her was I helped her create an affirmation for herself, like something she could, you know, something new that she could say to herself in those moments instead of this negative narrative that she had created over her life, you know, to give herself permission to not take care of herself. Maybe that is therapy. I don't know, but this is where we have to work in conjunction with all of the other practices that we're working in. And
Amanda, would you recommend not having any of those three supplies you were talking about, sugar and gluten? Would you recommend that it's better never using them? Do you think, or do you know, maybe with your investigation you found an answer to that, but would you recommend us not having any of those or from time to time?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the purpose of removing those foods is partly to evaluate to what extent they are not working for you. And sugar generally, I think, is a food that most people should not be eating. Sugar is not only does it have this, you know, kind of strong effect on blood sugar, which, you know, over time, of course, we all know can lead to diabetes or other complications. And it also behaves in the body as what we call an anti-nutrient. So it really robs the body of other important nutrients like magnesium and calcium and other, you know, just important nutrients for the body. So it robs our body of those things. It screws up our digestive system.
In which way? Could you explain that?
It can feed the wrong bacteria and bugs. And so it can help you develop what we call a dysbiosis, like an abnormal ecology of the digestive system. Okay, so sugar, I'm talking like processed white sugar. You know, certainly like fruit is a wonderful food and has lots of benefits and vitamins and phytonutrients and fiber and, you know, all these things. So, you know, when sugar comes in that natural package, it has all of those other components. But when you eat just plain refined sugar, it's devoid of lots of nutrients. It's devoid of fiber. It hits your bloodstream and spikes your blood sugar really quickly. And so, you know, leads to all of these other negative effects. So generally, especially if you're having health problems, sugar is a food to avoid. The gluten and dairy it depends is the answer really. And so we remove it. And then, you know, a lot of people find that they just feel so much better that, oh yeah, I need to stay away from this. And it kind of also depends on what else is going on. But typically what we'll do is we'll remove it for a period of about a month, 3 weeks to a month, and then we can trial it. This is what's called an elimination diet. So we remove the food for a period of time, and then we test it. I have the person eat the food if they want to, and then we observe. You know, we use this tracking tool that I mentioned earlier to look and see, like, is this person having some kind of reaction? And this is this really kind of cool piece that a lot of people don't know, is that you need to give your body 4 days to observe that effect. So you only introduce one new food every 4 days at the end of this elimination period. Because sometimes the body can have an effect up to 4 days later. If you didn't know that, you'd try it and be like, oh, nothing happened, and move on to the next thing. but you get muddied results that way. And so, you know, I think for a lot of people, gluten is a problem. And the reason is because it has a particular effect on the digestive system that allows these other negative processes in the body to happen.
And so where the diarrhea also?
Dairy, I think, is less commonly a problem, but for some people it is. And, you know, it's just so pervasive in the diet, it's really hard to really get a handle on how much that's contributing. There can be other problems too. You know, I mean, food sensitivities are a huge topic and, you know, those are the big players, but, you know, you really could react to any food and you need to try and understand what's happening. And because anxiety and depression are so closely linked with digestive dysfunction, you know, if you're reacting to something, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, like maybe it's almonds or maybe it's pickles, you know, or I don't know, it really could be anything at all. But, you know, you want to use that food tracking process to try and understand, you know, what else is contributing here. And I'm really well versed in this just because I have so many food sensitivities and they're so clearly connected to so many of my symptoms that, you know, I've had to get really clear about what's causing a problem. And for me, like I've had to remove some of these foods long term.
Like what, out of those three big ones?
Well, all three of them, for sure. Gluten and dairy and sugar, also eggs, soy, almonds, beef, pork, oddly enough, bananas, chia. Yeah, I mean, I eat them sometimes, but you know, I can only do it like once a week. And
it's a big amount of different kind of food. How did you get to those ones? So you tried a diet on every kind of those ones?
No, I didn't. I mean, I removed the big three and then I figured out, and well, actually I had removed gluten and sugar primarily. And then I still wasn't getting better and I was eating a lot of dairy. And so at some point I was like, I should probably stop and see. This was before I had this training and really focused on those three things with my clients. So, okay, I should probably give up dairy and see what happens. And there was a little bit of improvement. I was like, okay, and then I'd test it and try it and see what would happen. And oh, when I eat dairy, I would get digestive symptoms. Okay, can't do dairy. But I had also run a food sensitivity test. It's a blood test it tests like 150 foods. It's called the mediator release test. There's a couple different ways to test for food sensitivity, but so a lot of the foods that I mentioned came up on that test. And then, so I removed them all, and a lot of them were foods that I was eating every day and really relying heavily on. And so it was kind of a hard adjustment.
I imagine, but it really deserved it. Like you really felt and still feel a big change. Like nowadays you would say that you control pretty much better your anxiety and the potential depressions that you could have.
It definitely improved things. And then as I did it for a while and I would think, oh, I don't think this is really helping. I don't know if I really need to do this. But then I'd test a food, you know, I'd choose one that I was like, I want to try this and see if I can eat it. And actually, I can't eat that food. So, you know, almonds is one of the ones that, you know, I was like, this is silly. I should be able to eat almonds. I'm going to eat almonds. But when I eat almonds, I get like my back gets all inflamed. And it's, you know, the nerves from my digestive system are in that area in my low back. And I don't understand exactly how it works, but I know that if I eat that food, I may be having severe back pain and inflammation and my back will go out, you know, it'll just get really bad for 5 days, 6 days. And, you know, I can hardly walk and, you know, I can't lift anything and I'm all walking weird and hunched over and everything hurts for a long time. So, you know, it's pretty easy to stick to it because I know that if I make the wrong choice, it will have a consequence. And I mean, this is the thing about this model of care is that, you know, this is what I really love to help people do is sort out those details, you know, whatever it is for them. I mean, my case is like this, but it's completely different for each and every person. This is the place where people get back control over their symptoms, and their symptoms aren't running their life anymore. They understand, and they might even choose to make the choice, like, okay, I want to eat that special thing, and I know it's going to cause consequences, but I know what the consequences are going to be, and I know maybe I'm going to have a bite or two just to enjoy it, and I know that I can tolerate that and move on, you know?
Have you tried this? Because you have a family, a wonderful family, so of course, food is also a family topic. Like, you are sharing breakfast, lunch, dinner. It's a really important topic, so are you sharing that with your family, or your investigation is having an impact on your family?
I've tried not to necessarily impose my needs onto them, but because I cook dinner, in a lot of ways, our meals are, I try and make things for myself. But as I've over time begun to feel better and have a little more energy and been able to, sometimes I'll make something extra, or, like the kids really love lasagna, for example. So, I can't eat the lasagna. I can't adapt that recipe to suit my needs. And so for a long time, I just didn't make it. But finally, they were like, please, 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 can we have lasagna? Please, I want it. So I did, I was like, okay, I'll make lasagna. And maybe I have leftovers from another night that I can eat. And I just have a different meal. And that part of it is a little sad for me. And, I'm still working to heal those food sensitivities. And really for me, that's involving, healing. I did eventually do the testing to look at my gut and see what's going on in there. And there's definitely several kinds of infections going on in there. And that's preventing my digestive system from healing and being able to,
Do its work properly.
Yeah. And a topic I haven't really quite touched on, I just briefly did sort of, but are you familiar with the phrase leaky gut? Have you heard this term, leaky gut? Leaky. So a leak is like,
is a hole.
A hole. Yeah. Where
things are escaping.
Things are escaping. Exactly. So, one of the really key things to maintain in your body for optimal health is your gut barrier system. So our digestive system is a permeable membrane. It we eat things through the inner mouth and it goes down through all the tubes, but then the nutrients are absorbed through the wall of the intestine. It's designed to be somewhat permeable, but it's only designed to be permeable in a certain way. And those nutrients are supposed to pass through the cells. But with a leaky gut, what's happening is because of inflammation or damage to the intestine, the cells get these little gaps in between them. And then the food that we eat actually can pass through those gaps, but it can pass through in a different state than it can pass actually directly through the cells. And when that happens and that inappropriate molecule of stuff gets in between the cells, it shouldn't be there. It shouldn't be in the bloodstream in that form. And so the body responds as though it's an invader. So you get an immune response. The problem with gluten is that gluten makes these gaps in between the cells of the small intestine open up. It makes those gaps get wider and allows those pieces of food to pass through. I mean, it's not like big chunks of visible food. It's still small, but those proteins can get through. And so to really and truly heal my gut, to get rid of these food sensitivities, I have to find a way to seal up this barrier system and make sure that those junctions in between those cells are tight, like they're snug together and nothing can get through, and everything that's coming in and is only going through the cells, not in between the cells. But infections, parasites and such are one of the main things that can really disrupt this process. They can damage the environment in the intestine and allow this process to happen. And so, but when they've been in, I think that mine had been there for some time, for a long time. I mean, I think at the point I finally figured this out, I think it had been years. since I had acquired these infections or developed them. And so, you know, the damage was pretty extensive, and it's been a long journey. You know, I do feel like I'm making progress, but it can be slow. It's not necessarily, you know, the cleanup is easy, you know, and making sure I go to bed on time and making sure I get exercise and do my meditation, like that part's easy. But this longer term process of really altering the internal environment for optimal health is a much slower process. And the longer that you've been sick, the longer it takes to return all the way to health.
Okay, I see. Wow. Yeah. That's super interesting, Amanda.
Yeah.
I hope you will keep on finding elsewhere in your investigation, while you are doing your investigation, and like this, finding a complete solution to remove those issues our body are having. That's super interesting. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Do you want to add something to the listener? Do you have some advices, or would you recommend people to open their mind to other things than just thinking that mental issue or anxiety or depression is not just all about curing your mind?
Yeah. I mean, I think just as a parting thought to say that, you know, if you are someone who is suffering with depression or anxiety or any manner of mental health issue, that there is the possibility of healing from that. It's absolutely possible. And I've collected many, many stories of this method actually working. So, you know, you sort out the lifestyle and the diet piece and then investigate deeper to find out what else. Basically, the idea that I'm suggesting is that quote unquote mental illness is really a collection of symptoms that have a physiological basis.
Yes. Why separating the health of the body from the health of the mind when we know that they are both part of the same person and working together?
Yeah, it's not just about your mind. It's not like a defective mind. There's something disrupting your body and its health, and that you can figure out what that is. And one of the ways to access help with that is to find what's called a functional medicine practitioner, a functional medicine doctor. And there are people all over the world practicing this way. Not yet enough people everywhere, but this is the medicine of the future. It's individualized medicine that actually is working to resolve health at the root cause level, and to consider these actual causes of illness rather than just saying, oh, well, you have anxiety, you have to take medication forever. It's a really different model, you know, and just like, let's actually help people get well. It's absolutely possible to heal and recover from what we've considered a mental illness. But I really believe that it's usually actually an underlying infection or other imbalance in the body that can be fixed.
Okay, thank you very much, Amanda.
Thank you
for opening our mind to those topics, which is really interesting, and it explored so many things of the human and the food, which is super important in our day because it's what we are having every day. Yeah. So thank you so much. Dear listener, it was Radio Casa del Caracol from Petrolia in California, and we hope you enjoy our time together. Thank you, Amanda, for sharing your knowledge again and your time with us. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.